There had been abuse in my family, but it was mostly musical in nature.
I don't want any of this lover's lament crap. I want something peppy, something happy, something up-tempo. I want something snappy.
While we've never been stranded on a desert island, we're always prepared with a jukebox full of songs we couldn't live without. And so are our guests. I'm Greg Kot.
And I'm Jim DeRogatis. We'll hear from artists such as Mary J. Blige, Rush, and more about songs they can't live without. And later, we'll talk to the New York rock band Sunflower Bean. That's all coming up on Sound Opinions.
This is Sound Opinions, and later on in the show, Jim, we are going to visit with a fast-rising New York City band named Sunflower Bean that you and I both loved at last year's South by Southwest Music Conference. But first, you and I are going to take a swim out to that proverbial desert island, pop a quarter in the desert island jukebox, and play a song the artists who have been on our show cannot live without.
You know, Greg, the Desert Island Jukebox is a game I think as old as popular music and jukeboxes itself. Lots of people sit around and say, what would you put in the jukebox if you could only bring one song or 10 songs or whatever? You know, you're stranded on the desert island. The question of how electricity is there to run the jukebox never gets answered. We generally hog the Desert Island Jukebox ourselves. But when we have time and the artist is not rushing out to make a sound check or a flight, we like to play the game with artists who are particularly articulate because they're all music lovers, right? Mm-hmm. And everybody suddenly is transported to that 13 or 14-year-old boy or girl sitting in the basement playing each other records they're excited about. Who are we starting off with? This is a whole show of Desert Island Jukebox picks from guests on the show.
Well, we're going to start off with an artist with a really eclectic musical background, a guy who's played in punk bands, a guy who's been an electronic DJ and producer, a guy who's experimented with virtually every kind of musical genre over the last three decades.
And now an author.
And that would be Moby on the occasion of his recent memoir.
Okay, there is a song that I heard the other day that affected me so profoundly, and it made me really happy that it affected me as profoundly as it did. Actually, there are a few songs I've heard recently that have done that. But one is Peace Train by Cat Stevens. Mm. Hmm. And I heard it, and I haven't heard that song in forever. And it's so earnest and so beautiful. I mean, this iconic song, everyone's heard it a million times. But it's one of those songs that when you listen to it, you're like, it's so hopeful.
Now I've been happy lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world at one, and I believe it could be someday it's going to come. 'Cause out on the edge of darkness, there rides a peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country.
And also the context, you know, written whenever, late 60s, early
70s. Yeah.
And the belief behind it that things were about to get better, you know, and it really affected me. And also there's certain songs that I have to remind myself, like at one point they didn't exist. Like I was at a Paul McCartney concert and I was able to go, like, be on stage while he was playing. Like, I was not on stage with him, but like on the side of the stage, and he was playing Let It Be on piano. And I was sitting there, you know, 50 feet away from Paul McCartney playing Let It Be on piano, and all of a sudden it dawned on me, like, oh, he wrote this. Like, at one point this song didn't exist.
And he sat at a piano
and
he wrote
sat
it
at
just
a piano.
Like he's doing
and
it now.
And it's something about that. I was like, oh my God, like, this, it's not like this song has been around for 10,000 years and he's covering it. Like, he wrote it.
When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. and in my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom. Let it be, let it be, let it be, let it be, let it be. Whisper words of wisdom, let it be.
And Peace Train, to think that, like, at some point Cat Stevens wrote this song. So that would be my jukebox Desert Island pick of the day.
Those are great.
I was gonna go with The Boxer by Simon and Garfunkel, but I thought Peace Train instead.
Moby, a man who's covered Mission of Burma, going with two rather classic artists there, Cat Stevens and the Beatles, Greg. Next up, we have Mary J. Blige. I was not at this taping. I still, one of my great regrets over Sound Opinions, I had to teach that day, was not here when the queen of hip-hop soul visited us. Here is her Desert Island Jukebox pick.
If I go to an island, it's Stevie. It's Songs of the Key of Life.
Yeah, Songs of the Key of Life. Wow. That's a pretty great. And, you know, there's so much of it, too. That's the other thing that's really great. There's this, like, what is it, four sides of music plus the EP that he had in there as well?
Yeah.
What was it? You heard that as a kid, obviously.
Yes.
And any particular track on that record stand out for you? Or I know there's a ton of them, but anything in particular that you love?
Man, as
now can't reveal the mystery of tomorrow, but in passing we'll grow older every day. All that's born is new. Do know what I say is true, that I'll be loving you always.
Until the rainbow burns the star in the sky.
Always.
Until the ocean covers every mountain high.
Always.
Until the dolphin flies and perishes in the sea.
Always.
Until the moonlight this life becomes a dream.
Did you know that
knocks me off my feet? Pastime Paradise, which they wore out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They've been spending most of their lives living in a pastime paradise. Been spending most of their lives living in a pastime paradise. Been
Ordinary Pain, Summer Soft. I could keep.
Yeah, you can keep going.
I Wish. I don't want to keep going. But.
Well, he could transcend. He could make everything sound transcendent. Like there was a joy even the dark stuff, you know, that he had in his voice that is just extraordinary.
Yeah,
it's like a greatest hits record, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Mary J. Blige with Stevie Wonder, "Songs in the Key of Life." I wonder, Jim, how many artists would name that particular album as a signpost album in their life.
Stevie Wonder, in general, is a staple of the Desert Island Jukebox.
Yeah, beautiful choice. Next up, we've got Slater Kinney, drummer Janet Weiss, singer-guitarist Corin Tucker, and singer-guitarist Kerry Brownstein. They all made picks, and they come from all over the map. And first, we start with drummer Janet Weiss.
I think it's got to be Sam Cooke.
Which one?
Gosh. Well, I guess I would just take Greatest Hits.
Yeah. Can't go wrong with that.
Yeah. But that's just today. Any other day, you might get something totally different.
What is it about Sam that you love?
Well, last night on the bus, I did a little DJing on the drive, the 90-minute drive. And I was playing a bunch of songs that you might play at weddings. I mean, it's between Otis Redding and Sam Cooke. I just feel like you could listen to those voices forever, and you would just hear new things in them. And you would be less lonesome on your island, I guess.
I was born by the river in a little tent. Oh, and just like the river, I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know gonna come.
Who wants to go next? Carrie Korn? Who's got one?
You got one, Korn? I would pick Marquee Moon by Television.
Oh, yeah.
I love that record. I listened to it recently and I was like, I'm still totally in love with this record. I hear something new in it every time. I'm always kind of transported to the world of those guitars.
When did you first hear that record?
I think it was when I moved to Olympia, and I was just suddenly exposed to all this new music I hadn't heard, and I was probably like, you know, 17 at the time, but there was just mixtapes and dance parties, and people would be like, have you heard this record? And I was just totally floored.
Yeah, that's amazing stuff. So Carrie, what about you?
If it's just today, I was going to say a Stevie Wonder record, but maybe I'll just say a record that really I've been listening to a lot is Tears for Fears, Songs from the Big Chair.
Yeah.
I think I could listen to that a lot.
Yeah. That's not the one with, is that Everybody Wants to Rule the World in it?
Yeah. Head Over Heels. And
Yeah.
All of them. It's their hit record. There's some great sounds and songs on that record.
They had some pretty intense songs for like a band that sort of had a wimpy reputation. Their songs were actually pretty emotionally intense.
Yeah, the songwriting is really solid, and the singing.
So, ever an influence on the way you've approached stuff, or just kind of?
No, probably somewhere in the back of my brain, but
yeah,
I never listened to Tears for Fears and then went down and started playing guitar.
Yeah, right.
That's as far as the next album.
Exactly. Well, that's a good read. I love that. That's an out of left field choice that I was not expecting.
Well, I feel like you gave us license because you said it's just for today.
Right.
Like, it's just for my island today. Tomorrow I'll be on a different island.
The women of Slater Kenny, Janet Weiss, Corin Tucker, Carrie Brownstein, music lovers, one and all. So is the young R&B singer, multi-instrumentalist, songwriter, Shamir. A name that might not be as familiar to folks, except if they listened to him on Sound Opinions. A really great rising talent, and I think he'll surprise you with his pick.
Lately, I've been listening at least 15 times a day. This song called Lisbon by this band called Wolf Alice.
Mm. Yeah, I love that band. Yeah. UK band.
Yeah, right. Super cool.
How'd you come across it?
I had heard of them. Obviously, I heard Moaning Lisa Smile, which is like a cool song. And then I met them, hung out with them in Switzerland. Mm. We played the same festival, and they're just like really cool people. So I was like, okay, I'll check out their album. And that's one of the album tracks that I'm just obsessed with right now.
What do you like about the sound?
The drums in that song is insane, first and foremost. And I just love the melody. I love the second verse that Ellie sings. And she goes, feel like running, feel like crack, feel like going out and smashing windows.
I can
agree with that sometimes. Yeah. You know, just like,
Who can't?
I'm not afraid to die.
Shamir with a pick that I don't think either one of us could have predicted. Wolf Alice, a really good UK rock band, that song Lisbon that Shamir picked. Next up, we have Jim. I can't say how giddy we both were,
yeah,
knowing that we were going to get Rush on the phone to talk music and their career, and then finally end up with the Desert Island Jukebox picks from Alex Lifeson and Geddy Lee. But there we were, like a couple of kids listening to their stories. Alex is going to be up first with his Desert Island Jukebox pick.
For what it's worth, Buffalo Springfield.
Mm. Wow.
That's I remember the first time I heard that song in my dad's car on the radio. And it was a sunny, summery day, and I was just blown away by it. And every time I hear that song, I'm transported. There's something about the sound of it and the feel of it. The tremolo guitar and the background.
I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance from behind.
Yeah, it's a great collaboration, the Stills lyric, and then the I guess it was Neil that was playing that riff, that sort of reverberating haunting riff, but yeah, I know what you're talking about there. It's a song that sort of gets under your skin, doesn't it?
Yeah, and stays there.
Yeah. And Geddy, what about you?
I think I'd have to choose the Who album, Who's Next. I think it's one of the most important rock albums ever made, and certainly to me, it was a shining sort of pinnacle of what sort of adventurous rock meets melodic rock can do. And I think every single song on that album is so good. And it was a real game changer for me as to something to inspire me.
Don't cry, don't raise your eyes. It's only teenage wasteland.
Teenage wasteland. It's only teenage wasteland. Teenage wasteland. Oh yeah. Teenage wasteland. They're all wasted.
In terms of me wanting to write songs, I think The Who was probably the biggest influence on me. Pete Townsend's writing, I mean, to me, he's just the greatest writer of rock music that's ever been. So I've always admired him. I've always admired what he was able to do. And listening to those songs makes me want to write a song.
Yeah. Rush, going classic rock, going back to the 60s, early 70s with Buffalo Springfield and The Who. After a break, more Desert Island Jukebox picks from Sound Opinion's guests. Then later, we've got a live performance from Brooklyn Rocker's Sunflower Bean. That's all coming up on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.
Like a snake calling on a phone, I've got no time to be alone. Summer coming at me all the time. You better think I lose my mind, 'cause I'm stranded on my own. Stranded, far from home. Alright. I'm riding on a midnight train, but everybody does look the same. But something like a dirty reflection. I'm lost, babe, I've got no direction. And I'm stranded on my own. Stranded, far from home. Alright. Stranded, I'm so far from home.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Jim DeRogatis. My partner is Greg Kot, and we are sharing never-before-aired audio from some of the great guests we've had on the show. We are so lucky, Greg, to be able to have folks like these come in. Before the break, we talked to Mary J. Blige, Moby, and others. Now let's hear what legendary musician and one of the founders of A&M Records, Herb Albert, told us he'd take to his Desert Island Jukebox.
Oh, I really can't think of one. You know, I listen to a lot of classical music. I listen to jazz. I listen to pop. You know, I'm all over the board. So I don't know if there's one thing. I certainly adored Miles Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of the records he made were that will live on forever.
Miles had so many phases. Was there a particular phase of Miles's career that you really admired?
Well, you know, I think he was the seminal jazz artist. I think he really understood the art form. I mean, the Kind of Blue album is pretty spectacular. I mean, that thing sells like 5,000 records, a week or a month or whatever.
Yeah.
But that's a jazz album. It's the highest, you know, selling jazz album of all time. So he made a lot of, you know, noise, not just because he was Miles Davis, because he was special. The guy had a real feeling for making music that touches. He touched deeply. And you know, when he, in an interview, said, you hear three notes and you know it's Herb Alpert, I mean, that was quite flattering for me. Mm.
Herb Alpert going with a go-to classic of the jazz canon,
yeah.
Miles Davis. You can't go wrong with Kind of Blue. Next up, we've got Bob Mould, who's been a guest on our show numerous times, Jim. He is famous for having this collection of 45 RPM singles that have formed the foundation of his musical career. And he's going to go back to an earlier era to give us his Desert Island Jukebox pick.
Just got the Beatles mono box set. So I keep going back to the same default. I always, you know, Revolver never grows old for me. Always a great record, and just pick your song. It's just a masterpiece.
Turn off your mind, relax, and float downstream. It is not dying.
It's true. Tomorrow Never Knows, man. Still blows my mind every time I hear it.
How many bands?
Yeah.
How many generations? It's amazing.
And what about the mono mix, the mono version of that record? Because the Snare. Beatles fans go back and forth.
It's good. It's different. It's different. I've heard, you know, I mean, I've spent so much time with the, you know, with the stereos over the years. It's nice to hear. Drums are a little more focused. I think everybody's like, oh my God, Ringo, there he is.
Mm-hmm.
One of our heroes, Greg, Bob Mould, going back to the classic mono mix of Revolver. You know, I'm sitting here on my right arm. I've got the cover of Revolver tattooed. On the left, I have the Husker Du symbol.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow appropriate with Bob. Now we're going to go to a behind-the-scenes player, largely. L.A. Reid, as a producer, has worked with artists as diverse as Mariah Carey and Meghan Trainor. Played a role in the career of Kanye West, was the founder of LaFace Records, and now the number one man at Epic Records, one of the last big remaining major labels. What does he play on the Desert Island Jukebox?
I like to hear Haitian Divorce by Steely Dan.
Wow.
He is a fusion guy.
That's what I want to hear today.
What is it about that tune?
The melodies are incredible. The Caribbean rhythms are incredible. But the story is just so funny to me.
Yeah.
It's funny. You know, this couple, you know, she goes off to the island. She has an affair. And she comes home pregnant. And he thinks it's his. And the kid comes out black.
He's got a surprise coming.
Hey, I just think it's a funny story.
A wicked wit those boys had.
Yes, wicked.
That's great.
Reunion in the USA. They
I was not, you know, I wouldn't. This is one of those choices where you kind of go, okay, what's LA going to pick? I mean, not you blew my mind with that choice.
Never, never. That wouldn't have been in the top 20,000.
That's awesome. I love it. That's great. L.A. Reid with Haitian Divorce by Steely Dan. You know what? Again, one of those picks we just didn't see coming. Very cool reference from the 70s.
Well, guys like Herb Albert and L.A. Reid, you know, in the music business, there's that the ultimate praise for guys like that. They've got ears.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed they did. That wraps up our trip to the desert island, though. Now we want to ask, what's one song you would take and play on the Desert Island Jukebox? Call 888-859-1800 and leave a message with your pick and why. Next up, we're going to talk to a young rock band from New York City, Sunflower Bean. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX. Welcome back to Sound Opinions. That is the song Human Ceremony from our guest this week, the young Brooklyn art rocker Sunflower Bean. Three members of the band, Greg, Nick Kivlin on guitar and vocals, Julia Cumming on bass and vocals, and Jacob Faber on drums. They're a hard-working band. From 2014 to 2015 alone, they played the most shows in New York City of any band, or so they claimed.
Yes, Jim, and their first record came out last year, Human Ceremony, very well received. You know, a style that's all over the map. You really can't put your finger on they do this one thing. They bring a lot of influences into their music. There's everything from a little bit of a British folk thing in some of the songs to something heavier, more metallic, and everything in between. We saw them at South by Southwest in 2016. We're very impressed with their poise, their confidence, and their songwriting at that point. And we saw that they had tremendous potential. You know, the band started with Nick and Jacob. So I asked Nick about how they got together and what the idea for the group was initially.
Me and Jacob were not really friends, actually. We were just becoming friends when we started playing together. I was trying to start my own band where I would be writing the songs and playing guitar. And I was waiting around at the high school waiting for this drummer that I knew in the city to get back to me because I was going to go in and jam with him. And Jacob was like on an off period or something. And we were kind of just like, oh, well, why don't me and you just play and like save me the trip like going to Manhattan. We can just play right now. And then I never played with the other drummer and me and Jacob played every day after that.
Yeah, he's still wondering why he haven't returned his call. He's left numerous voicemail messages since then. So, Julia, where do you come into this mix? You were doing your own thing in New York at the time, too, right?
Yeah, I'm from, Alphabet City, like East Village. And I was in another band, too, and I was kind of doing my own music. I guess me and Nick became friends, and he was like, I'm starting this band called Sunflower Bean. And I was like, I remembered it, and I was like, oh, that's going to be cool. And I saw them play, actually. There was, like, an array of bass players, and Nick was like, just do it. I was nervous because I thought that the boys were really good, and I was like, oh, if we do this, like, I have a feeling that this is going to be the thing that we do. And that was kind of like an overwhelming thought.
And then Julia came over for one practice, and she was like a fish in water.
mm-hmm.
Like, it just worked perfectly.
Oh, wow. So yeah. It was instant kind of love, huh?
It was pretty
music-wise.
Much instant.
I knew. I had a feeling, and I was kind of scared because I was like a senior in high school, and I was like, oh, man.
For people who don't know the band, I mean, you were teenagers when all this was happening. You were high school age people, right?
Yeah.
When it was all pretty much happening. Pretty staggering, I think, when people realized that you were playing gigs in New York City fairly regularly at this point in your lives. I want to get to that in a minute, but let's hear some music first. What do you want to play first?
I think the first song we're going to play is Easier Said.
Cool.
Thanks.
Ready?
Yeah.
Easier Said from Sunflower Bean on Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot with Sunflower Bean here in the studio. Nick Kivlin, Jacob Faber, Julia Cumming. A lot of sound from three instruments. So the cliche, every article about Sunflower Bean has got to talk about the fact that you're teenagers starting this band. You're from the home of hip-hop. Why were you guys even interested in starting a rock band as young people in the United States of America? Because everybody listens to rap music these days, and rock bands are passé. Julia, where are you coming from on this?
My instinct was to say because we're losers. but no, I think that it's just kind of who we've always been, and I think that we were lucky to have parents who were all really interested in music and did stuff and kind of supported our hopes a little bit. We talk about it a lot, but there is like a bit of a DIY scene usually in a lot of cities. In New York, there was like 285 Kent and a lot of places where we could go and see music and see people that just put on shows and do these things that you don't really think is possible. And you're like, oh, I could do that. This kind of feeling, one that's hard to shake. From easy smoke rises high as the moon.
So your generation of parents, you know, it needs to be said, like my generation of parents, there's no way I would have been influenced by that in terms of this kind of music if I were in a band. And yet you guys are coming from a generation of parents that, you know, heard the Ramones.
You know, rock and roll in, you know, a classic sense is not really the sound of our generation exactly. It doesn't really feel like mm-hmm. the sound of the youth. And I think that is maybe one of the most exciting parts about being a rock band now is because you can kind of try to figure out how to keep it fresh and how to keep it contemporary and interesting, because these are like things that people know and see and it feels like your parents' thing. But you know, there are bands like Tame Impala and Unknown Mortal Orchestra and stuff like that that kind of can twist it and make it so it's not just like, it doesn't feel old. And I think that's something we try to do.
It's interesting. So you're coming from these rock touchstones. How do you make it your own? What are you finding is your way of sort of, you know, putting your personal stamp on something that has been around for, you know, 50, 60 years now?
I don't think it's as much as a conscious effort to do something original. It's just sort of your translation, interpretation of the last, you know, 50 to 60 years of music, which isn't really that long, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the span of things, like 50 to 60 years is no time at all. In 100 years, people won't know who came first, Sunflower Bean or Nirvana. 10 years, 20 years. What are these things in the scheme of...
That's right.
Time.
Well, I think the thing also is that Sunflower Bean is all three of us. Like, we all write the songs all together, so it's not coming from one person. And because of that, there's a lot of each of our different, you know, influences. And those influences coming together, I think, you know, hopefully does make something original. Like, we're just as influenced by the Beach Boys as we may be by, like, Noy. And to kind of bring all that stuff together, I think, is a part of our sound. I want you to give me enough time to help me figure out. I want you to give me enough time to help me figure out.
So, Julia, coming into this group, Nick and Jacob had already gotten a thing going. There were songs being written. You're a vocalist and a songwriter in your own right. Mm-hmm. How did you feel coming to this band that was already somewhat established? How did you see yourself fitting in with these guys?
The band, when I saw it, was still in like baby stages because you were having a hard time finding a bass player. The band that I was in before this was like kind of like acoustic, psychedelic, like kind of trying to be Syd Barrett-y. And then my own music, I was trying to figure out where that stood post that, and I definitely wanted to do something really heavy, and I am like a big you know, like Who fan, and I thought Jacob was like an amazing drummer and like reminded me of Keith Moon, and I just thought that it would be just really fun and a way to enter a new phase and try all these things and try to get to a different part of myself as a musician.
You're listening to Sound Opinions. We're here in the studio with Sunflower Bean. How about another song?
This next song is called I Was Home. It's a song about my friend Aaron.
I was home.
I was home from Sunflower Bean on Sound Opinions. I'm so glad you played that song because I remember when I first saw you guys, I knew the song Wall Watcher, I think it was, right? Kind of a song that had been released before the record came out. And I really liked that. And then I heard that song. And I'm going, what the heck is going on here? You know, it didn't sound like the same band, but it was a good feeling. Like, these guys aren't one style of music. And I imagine that causes some problems when you're trying to tell people what kind of a band you are.
We call it neo-psychedelia for the digital age.
You know, I think a lot of the best bands all alternate their sound a lot from different song to song, you know. Like, I always think of us in that aspect, it's kind of like as Led Zeppelin, the way they bounce.
Not that we're...
Not any comparison other than the fact that their albums have, not the first one, but everything after that has like a very interesting range of songs. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they have like their folk song, their hard rock song.
If it was just one thing, it would be boring, especially for three, you know, artists who are trying to, you know, do something and be passionate about it together. I think when we started recording the album too, we kind of realized some stuff as well. Because before we were like pretty heavy. We were being a really heavy band, and we put out this single with Fat Possum, the first thing we did with them. And we had tried to really record it like, you know, at this studio that was like known for getting like really good like Black Sabbath-y drums, and it was cool what we made. But I think from doing that, we realized that we wanted to figure out some other things that we could do as well. And I went to school for classical singing, and I was like kind of ignoring that for whatever reason. And then I was like, wait, I really kind of want to do that. And that's where a lot of the harmonies came in on the album, and, you know, trying different stuff. And I think that, you know, that's become part of our sound and being able to represent the album that we made live rather than, you know, just being like this... being like a heavy one sounding thing.
Right, right. I think one of the things that was interesting to me was that sound sort of came together. It seemed to be, you guys played a lot. And my sense was that there was a lot of gigs, a lot of shows that you guys played, which is always a good thing. But I think there's also this, when I've talked to bands from New York City that have played in that scene in the past, they talk about how difficult it is to get those early gigs when you don't really have a lot of material, you don't have a reputation.
Yeah, it was just our case that we knew so many people. We basically opened like every single show for about 6 months. Like, we played at 8 o'clock at every single show in New York.
We played the most shows out of any band between 2014 and 2015 in New York City. That's like the official listing, you know. And it's definitely a cool thing that we did, and helped us like learn a lot about each other as musicians, and, you know, we can kind of anticipate each other's movements, which is cool. But, you know, I think we're excited to make the next record too and learn a lot more about the studio and being able to do that, because I think once you know that too, then you can kind of that to me would be freedom, would be knowing how to record really well.
Did you learn stuff from making this record that you want to take into the next album when it comes
out? Absolutely.
What are the main things that you took out of that experience that you want to apply going forward, Nick?
Mostly it would be unflinching dedication, and that sort of buckling down and really forcing yourself to stay focused. I think that's my biggest problem, is like, I'll do something and then I'll be like, oh, well, it gets the essence of it, then it's good enough, you know? But being more of a perfectionist has a lot of benefits, and I don't think I had that before we recorded this album.
I think also when we made the album, I was 19, the boys are 20. Mm-hmm. And now they're 21, I'm 20. And, you know, even like a year, so many things happen and they change you. And I think us having also the confidence to look deeper into ourselves with songwriting, I think I'm excited for that and go to some different places there with just, you know, the songs, you know, because now we've kind of like said hello to the world and like, you know, we know who we are, but I think that there's still so many things that we can do over the next few months with songwriting, and mm-hmm. we're really looking forward to that, I think.
You're listening to Sound Opinions. We are in the studio with Sunflower Bean, Nick, Jacob, Julia. What are we going to hear next?
The last song we're going to play is called Come On.
Come On from Sunflower Bean. The new record is Human Ceremony. So we've been in the studio with Sunflower Bean, Nick, Jacob, and Julia. Thanks so much for coming in, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. So fun.
That wraps up our chat with Sunflower Bean. To check out exclusive video of their live performance, visit soundopinions.org. Greg, what do we have on the show next week?
Jim, we are actually here in Austin, Texas, the South by Southwest Music Conference. We will have a full report with the music and the bands that you need to hear about.
Greg, thanks to Adam Yaffe and Andrew Gill for helping with Sunflower Bean. Sound Opinions have been produced by Brendan Banaszak, Evan Chung, Alex Claiborne, and Ayana Contreras.
Operator, or could you help me place this call? See, the number on the matchbook is old and faded.
On Sound Opinions, everyone's a critic. So now it's time to hear what you have to say.
New messages.
Hey, Jim and Greg. This is Mark in Charlottesville, Virginia. For your one and done show, I would like to suggest the 2004 self-titled album by a girl called Eddie. which is the stage name of a singer-songwriter named Erin Moran, not the Happy Days actress, by the way. It's a really melancholy album, all about heartbreak and loss, and the songs are just gorgeous. Sometimes they're subdued, sometimes they're jaunty, sometimes they rise up and soar majestically and manage to be joyful and heartbroken at the same time. But there are tears all over town. Too many tears all over this town. There are tears. The album was co-produced by Richard Hawley, and it sounds a lot like some of his albums. There's lots of vibrato guitar and vibraphones and strings, and the songs kind of float and breathe organically instead of having a lot of attack to them, although some of them do rock. And the end result has more in common with something like Burt Bacharach or Dusty Springfield than it does with any of its contemporaries, and that gives the record a timeless quality. It doesn't sound like anything else from its era. Thanks a lot, guys.
Hi, this is Will. I'm calling from St. Paul, Minnesota, and I'm calling about your one-and-done show. I hope you will give a shout-out to the Exploding Hearts, Portland, Oregon, kind of punkish power pop band from about 15 years ago, who put out one album, Guitar Romantic, which is just a masterpiece of, well, someone described it as sounding like The Clash if Mick Jones had written all the songs. Unfortunately, they got into a van accident after a show, and three out of four members of the band were killed. So unfortunately, there's a sad story behind why they only had one album. But that one album is just a, in my opinion, just a great classic of that kind of sound. Thanks. Bye.
Hi, this is Gary from New Hyde Park, New York. I just listened to your One and Done episode, and as usual, it was very interesting, and I learned a lot about different music I hadn't heard before, but I think you left out the most obvious choice, Derek and the Dominoes. I know Eric Clapton's in it, so you're going to avoid doing something with somebody so famous in it, but come on, this album had Layla on it. It had Duane Allman playing with Eric Clapton. And I had seen those tapes of them on the Johnny Cash show when they were actually trying to be a real band. So I don't think that you could have a one-and-done show without Derek and the Dominoes, that's for sure. Thanks, bye.
Hi there, my name is Earl, and I live in Oregon. And, yeah, I enjoyed the thing about Duke of Earl. But let me tell you, there are a group of people in this country who really hate that song.
Duke, 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 Duke of Earl, Duke, Duke, Duke of Earl, Duke, Duke, Duke of Earl, Duke, Duke, Duke of Earl.
As soon as somebody learns that my name is Earl, I see a little gleam in their eye, a little smile comes to their lips, and I know what's going to happen. They will start singing. Duke, 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 Duke of Earl, Duke, Duke, Duke of Earl. Whether they can sing or not, and they usually can't. And I'll tell you, it wasn't even funny or amusing the first time. And the 5,000th time, yeah, I don't have a good feeling about that song, guys. Sorry.
No more messages.
To give us your opinions on Sound Opinions, call our hotline, 888-859-1800. We'll be back next week with more Sound Opinions, produced by WBEZ Chicago and distributed by PRX.